Donald Trump bragged about sexually assaulting women, but said it was just talk. Then, 12 women claimed he'd done it to them, sparking a national conversation with over a million tweets by women who said it had happened to them, too. The mainstream media has moved on, but Joy of Resistance is staying on the case. This Sunday, November 20th, 6 to 7 p.m., we will interview noted attorney Gloria Allred, who is representing one of the Trump 12, who, though threatened to keep quiet, will not be intimidated. We'll also speak with former ADA Mark Fleedner, who will tell us our legal options should this happen to us. And Jodine Alguin Taylor, an organizer with GOP Hands Off Me, will talk about the just-released statement by 100 black women leaders. So tune in Sunday, 6 to 7 p.m. to Joy of Resistance for feminism that won't drop the ball.
Hallelujah, children. This is Reverend Billy. Now listen to me. It's the holiday time. Time to shop. Amen. Come on down to Joe's Pub Sunday, November 20th. What we got at 2 p.m. in the afternoon is an opportunity to gather. The show is called Gather After This Year of Living Hate. Yes, we're saying the hate doesn't have to continue, and we can convert it into organizing, surviving, adjusting to this shopping environment. Amen, hallelujah. Come down to Joe's Pub. It's at the Public Theater, 425 Lafayette, downtown Manhattan, near Astor Place. Tickets, joespub.com. With a discount code, you got a cheap ticket. The discount phrase, don't tell anybody, tell everybody, honeybee.
We survive the fire.
On Friday, November 18th, join the BAI family for the Commons Brooklyn First Annual Karaoke Night. Sing your heart out for WBAI, a night of songs from the 60s. Sing the Beatles, the Stones, the Crystals, the Ronettes, the Shirelles, the Supremes, and many more. Come sing, have fun at the First Annual Commons Brooklyn Karaoke Night while you support WBAI. That's Friday, November 18th at 7 p.m. at the Commons Cafe, 388 Atlantic Avenue, between Hoyt and Bond Streets, in the Borough Hill section of Brooklyn.
Hi, I'm David Kenny, inviting you to join me for the annual Everything Old is New Again holiday concert to benefit WBAI. It's Sunday, December 4th at 12:30 p.m. at the Metropolitan Room. Again, that's Sunday, December 4th at 12:30 p.m. at the Metropolitan Room for the Everything Old is New Again holiday concert to benefit WBAI. For more information, visit givetowbai.org.
He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so be good.
My earth. Good morning. You're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org. This is Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine Davis in studio. We have a big crowd in here with us today. First, my co-host,
Paulette Spencer.
And our editorial person and reader,
Matt Mazza.
And we have a special guest,
Earth Mom, a.k.a. Helena.
There you are. So we have a full house this morning, and we are so happy to be with you. A lot going on in the world, and Helena is going to give us a very special report coming up. And Matt will be continuing his presentation of Ishmael. And Paulette, how have you been?
Wonderful.
Good.
I attended the event, the fundraising event last Friday at SOBs, celebrating Latin music through the show New World Gallery and Chico Alvarez. And the event was mesmerizing, energetic, and very beautiful. It was quite the crowd and lots of dancing, and I'm so happy that I was there and danced my you-know-what off.
Well, you know, it's lovely because it is a holiday season and there are a lot of special events coming up. And Helena, you have an event coming up too very, very soon.
Yeah, we do. Well, actually, now it's Thursday, so Friday night, this Friday, November 18th, we're doing karaoke at the Commons, and it's 1960s music. We thought that might be a good way to start, you know, 60 years of BAI.
Oh, that is great. I thought maybe it was like you wanted to nostalgia, go back to a time when life was a lot simpler, it
yeah,
seems.
Yeah, a little bit simpler.
It wasn't that simple, really. You know, the Vietnam War, there was a lot going on, but somehow,
In retrospect,
it feels like we're living in a nightmarish world now.
It's
that
real different.
Is beyond anything I thought possible in this country.
Yeah. When you look at some of the stuff that went on then, and thinking it was so horrific and such a big deal compared to
and
what
it was.
Goes on. Yeah, but I mean,
no. See, I was around to see the Vietnam War on television. It was horrific, but it was not like on our doorstep. It wasn't right here in this country. And what's happening in this country right now is pretty scary, also.
It is, but I mean, the new president-elect may just bring the revolution on a little bit sooner.
I think that might be the case.
Yeah.
That might very well be the case.
He was still in the Spore formation in the 60s.
Yeah.
It was growing up.
Yeah, growing up. Do you want to just jump right in and tell us a little bit about what you've been doing
at
Standing Rock?
Yeah.
Because I was really happy to hear that you had gone out there. What inspired you to pick up and go out there? Well, maybe we should tell people what's happening. Is there people? There probably are some people who don't know.
Okay, in case
the
there's
DAPL
anyone that doesn't know, DAPL, Dakota Access Pipeline, they're building what's been prophesized as the Black Snake, and it is this pipeline that's not even, the pipes are not even that big and fat, but it's going from all the way up north and down through the Gulf, and they're trying to get it on the Missouri River. It goes through treaty territory, and the tribes there were not consulted, and it even goes, I believe it goes through part, and I'm not 100% sure, so I don't want to misrepresent, but part of the Standing Rock tribe's land. But the big deal is under the Missouri River, and with these pipelines, it's not if, it's more like when they burst. The Missouri River provides water to approximately 18 million people. And if this pipeline happens, it's going to be pumping 500,000 gallons of crude Bakken oil, which is this really heavy oil, every day. And originally it was set to go by Bismarck, where all the white people live. But instead, they put it through to treaty territory and close to the reservation and under the river. And what's been happening since April, the youth got together, and they did run to D.C. to say no to this, and they started camping out at the on the Standing Rock Reservation, and it's just grown and escalated. And as one of the people that, you know, is part of the organizing there from the beginning said, it's living prophecy, because this has been prophesized that all the nations, all the tribal nations, would come together to fight this Black Snake. And being there, wow, I feel so privileged. I was following it, and my heart was there and wanting to go, but thinking there was no way in the world. And then Reggie Johnson told me about a bus that was going, and I still thought there was no way. However, I inquired about it, got to go on that. The bus came back to New York. I got on it, got off it, got on it, got off it, got on it, finally got off about 40 miles away and hitchhiked back to camp because I could not leave. Then fortunately, I got to go back again, and I'm planning to go back again within the next week or two. The pull there is just so strong, and I've been interviewing a lot of different individuals, and the way one woman described it, she said it's like, you know, heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking wide open. And some other people have described it as being there, and almost everything you've ever done in your life has led up to this moment of being there. It's people working together. It's a lot of Native people. And then people from all over the world. There have been, I think, at least 312 nations, tribal nations that have come. All their flags are up. It's really glorious and beautiful. And people from around the world supporting. And I've just made a lot of new friends and just beautiful people, and learning from them, seeing this generosity, this joy, this kindness, this keeping of your word, and being in prayer, because what the elders are saying and the people that are communing with spirit, they're saying that Creator is there, and the way this is going to be won isn't through fighting, but it is through prayer.
I believe that, and it's I think that it's an indication of our whole time.
Mm.
You know, like this whole concept of the you know, the way racism is coming out as a consequence of this election, and misogyny, and all these toxic energies, emotions, belief systems that have been here all along, but kept under wraps. Now, all of a sudden, is all out there. Everything is hanging out. And so I believe that there is a lot of change taking place, and it just can't, nothing can be hidden anymore.
I agree. That's what I was thinking when you were saying about the truth coming out. Yeah, because the clergy were there. There were, this is interesting, I think he's an Episcopal priest, near Standing Rock, who had called to, we wanted 100 clergy to come. He got 524, which oddly enough is the amount of years since Columbus started his mess. And they came and they denounced the doctrine of discovery. Then they went to Mayor Dalrymple's headquarters. And what happened was, and they made it so clear, that there was a Native man with them who was also there saying, you know, no Dakota Access Pipeline and being a water protector. And the thing, one key thing here is that the people there are not protesters. They are water protectors. It's not going saying, no, 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 but it's life affirming. It's protect our water, protect what's sacred. Just another aside, I'm sorry, but I'm thinking as I'm talking here, I was talking to one of the ladies that grew up in Standing Rock on the res and in that area, and she said all that land is sacred. It's just not one little area that's a burial ground. That whole area was all burial grounds and just got messed up over the years with the Army Corps of Engineers and everything. But when they were in the rotunda trying to get the mayor's attention, one of the Native men that was with them got treated, one of the clergy was telling me this, so much worse than the white people, and they called him on that, you know, saying, what are you doing here? Why is he being treated so different from the way we are?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow, so that's pretty amazing, and I know that you must have taken pictures and gotten footage and audio and all kinds of stuff.
What I've done was I have a YouTube channel called Earth Mum, M-U-M, and I have stuff on there. I don't have everything up. I wanted to edit some of it, but I'm going to probably get it up sooner or later, edited or unedited. And WBAI, now we have a YouTube channel. And I'm not sure if it's WBAI 99.5, but I'm going to upload. Once I upload my stuff on that, I'll let everybody know. Because it's great to see, because I was on direct actions, and you see the interaction with the police. And they could be pretty bad, you know. They're rough, and they even treated the elders poorly, putting everyone in these huge dog cages, these huge pens, and, you know, tying people's hands up behind their backs and rough and just not having consideration. Just on that note, there was one of the elders, Grandma Carol, and she, I never even knew what a fist bump was, but when you put the two fists together, she fist bumped one person while they were being arraigned. And this woman, who's in her 70s, was put in solitary confinement until one of the policemen said, you don't belong here. I mean, absurd things, really absurd things.
Well, also, one of the things I learned actually over the fund drive, I'm trying to remember who exactly is behind the pipeline, Standing Rock, the DAPL pipeline. But the reason it's being built is not because we actually need the oil, or that we need the oil to be piped south. But the problem is that the group that owns the processing station,
it might be Energy Transfer Partners, I'm not sure.
Yeah, but it's they're like in Texas.
Uh-huh.
So it's in order to bring the oil down to Texas for the benefit of this particular company. So you could also get clean crude in Texas. We don't actually need that. It's just all for the purpose of creating money, you know, to create resources. And, you know, they claim that it's supposed to be to liberate the United States from Arab oil.
Uh-huh.
But that's a big lie, first of all, because we're still in conflicts in the Middle East. But that's really what it's about. It's about benefiting a particular company because they have their processing plant actually can't handle clean oil. It's built specifically for crude. So since they can only use crude, they're rejecting the oil that's coming up in Texas, clean oil, such as it is, for the crude. And so they're bringing it from Canada through the entire United States into Texas to benefit this particular company. And I know who's behind it, but for some reason it slipped my mind. But I'm like, wow, really? And that's really what it is. So it's all about this kind of a horrible backdoor deal. And it's also about the police state. You know, they're testing out the police state because these are not real police. These are, you know, what do you call those, warriors for pay?
Oh, some of them are, yeah.
Mercenaries. Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying that the police aren't there also.
Oh, yeah.
But the ones who are really, you know, doing all this horrific stuff. And then how is it possible that this is not being monitored by our politicians? You know, because they're like, I'm looking at them, you know, attacking people with dogs.
Yeah.
Spraying them. And it's not like a mace little spritzer. They've got cannons.
No, they're big, yeah, and have the rad the sound things,
yeah,
the LRADS machines, yeah, they kind of fry your brains.
So it's really such an aggressive effort to against these people, and it just strikes me as insane, beyond the pale, beyond belief. The insanity of what they're doing to these indigenous populations. And it was interesting. Hilly and I were talking about that and came to the conclusion that these people don't know anything about the history of America. And that's part of the problem in America, that the truth of the genocide that took place in this nation to create this nation is not well known by most people who live here.
Yeah, well, especially us that are older. I think now in school it's being taught, but
To the level.
No, probably not to the level that it should be. But it's so interesting being there because another aspect is coming up because people are getting together and there's solar energy there and wind energy. And actually, a guest I'm having on my show Saturday morning at 6 a.m., his name is Joshua Tree, and he brought a geodesic dome, two of them actually, one at one camp and one at the other. And he also brought solar panels. And in the geodesic dome, there are these solar heaters that also provide ambient light. And everything's turning and moving in a really interesting and in a good way. But, you know, sometimes it's like taking your hand off the wheel. And there's something so special about getting up early in the morning. And there's the prayer circle just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And every morning there's a water ceremony where the ladies walk, and everybody, if they want, walks down to the water, too, to pray there. And it's just gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. People living from their hearts in a beautiful way.
It's really wonderful. Well, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. And why don't you give that plug again for your show?
Oh, good, yeah. Oh, well, I'm on Morning Eclectic Saturday at 6 a.m. And Joshua Tree, who brought the geodesic dome and solar panels, is going to be on, and we're going to talk about the camp more. And come sing with us on Friday night. It's just going to be fun, just hanging out. I mean, you can support BAI, but sing all the 60s songs and just be silly and funny. And people from the Family Acting Repertory Company are going to come and maybe help get people going. But it's going to be a hoot. Come on down. 7 to 10 p.m. at the Commons, 388 Atlantic Avenue. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. You'll be right back. And welcome back. You're listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine with Paulette, Matt, and Earth Mom. So you were talking about transformative dance a moment ago. Tell us a little something, Paulette.
I think I'm drawing from the experience that I've had, I think, over the summer of taking these fantastic dance lessons and private lessons and really seeing how, as one relaxes into it, you sort of merge with your partner a bit. And I think I experienced a bit of that during the benefit event last Friday. And it was so beautiful. And it occurred to me, I think, towards the end of the event when I was dancing with someone, and it was a particularly long piece of music. So it was kind of humorous because it was gorgeous and the sound was so full. And so everyone got on the dance floor. But it was so long that even when there was a cadence, we all thought it was ending. It would continue. By the end, everyone was perspiring, wondering when this thing was going to end. And so at some point, some of the couples sort of dropped out. And I was there with my partner, you know, this guy who I just met. And at one point, it was as if I almost... I would say just locked into the fact that we had this interaction, and the sort of sense of communicating, and particularly with salsa dances, that's what I can talk about, where you're not actually holding the person's hands, you're touching their hands, and the sense of direction comes with how they hold their hands against yours. And it was so beautiful that, you know, after dancing for 10 minutes or 15 minutes together, you start to read each other. And it was a lovely experience. And what I mean by transformation is that of course you keep, you are who you are yourself, but there's that extra communication where someone may tilt their hand a certain way and you know exactly what they mean. Or, you know, you may miss a cue, but the next time that cue comes, you know what they meant. And it turns into a sort of choreography. And it becomes you and that person in the room. And I remember thinking I lost sense of anybody else around me. Wow. And so it was just really beautiful and, you know, calming to the spirit. And it was just this lovely music. And then it was over. And we just walked off the floor, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was quite something. It was very healing, I would say.
Well, that sounds very beautiful. I can see how that would be the case. I think all communication can be like that. And if we begin to regard the human interaction with that level of delicacy and attention,
yeah.
I think that could be expanded in so many ways in terms of just the whole dance of life can be very beautiful, and the communications can be very subtle. We live, you know, we tend to live in a world where everything is screaming at us, but that's a very beautiful description that you gave. I could see the healing effect of it. Very, very nice. I appreciate that. So we'll have an opportunity to do more things like that, and I believe David Kinney has an event coming up. We have this karaoke event coming up. So there'll be a lot of times probably in the next holiday weeks where people will be getting together and as families and friends. So maybe we should bring to it that attitude that you're talking about.
There's someone I have in mind I'd like to bring on the show who dances. Mm-hmm. And I think could speak about this from his perspective that I think we could all benefit from.
I think so. That would be cool. That would be very cool to really look at that beautiful communication of dance and movement. It's very important. So we're going to transition in just a moment. I'm going to play a little bit more music, I think. And when we come back, we're going to go back into the world of Ishmael. Mm-hmm.
So we are going to continue reading Ishmael, which is this dialogue between a student and teacher. The teacher happening to be a gorilla. And last we left off, Ishmael was telling his student about the formation of a law, observing a certain phenomenon and codifying it as a law. So, everyone past the age of 2 knows that Newton's achievement was not in discovering the phenomenon of gravity. It was in formulating the phenomenon as a law. And the student says, yes, I see what you mean. In the same way, nothing you discover here about life in the community of life is going to astound anyone. Certainly not naturalists or biologists or animal behaviorists. My achievement, if I succeed, will simply be in formulating it as a law. Okay, got it. So, Ishmael goes on. Would you say that the law of gravity is about flight? I thought about that for a while and said, it isn't about flight, but it's certainly relevant to flight inasmuch as it applies to aircraft in the same way it applies to rocks. It makes no distinction between aircraft and rocks. Yes, that's well said. The law we're looking for here is much like that with respect to civilization. It's not about civilizations, but it applies to civilizations in the same way that it applies to flocks of birds and herds of deer. It makes no distinction between human civilizations and beehives. It applies to all species without distinction. This is one reason why the law has remained undiscovered in your culture, according to Taker mythology. Man is by definition a biological exception. Out of all the millions of species, only one is an end product. The world wasn't made to produce frogs or katydids or sharks or grasshoppers. It was made to produce man. Man, therefore, stands alone, unique, and infinitely apart from all the rest. True. So as we were talking about this pipeline, man reigns supreme, never mind nature or the damage it does to water supplies. We just go ahead because we are above these natural laws. Ishmael spent the next few minutes staring at a point about 20 inches in front of his nose, and I began to wonder if he'd forgotten I was there. Then he shook his head and came to. For the first time in our acquaintance, he delivered something like a mini-lecture. The gods have played 3 dirty tricks on the takers. Now, the takers, by the way, are the people who came later, the agriculturalists, as opposed to the leavers, who just lived on what was there, hunting and gathering. In the first place, the takers, put the world where the takers thought it belonged, in the center of the universe. They really hated hearing this, but they got used to it. Even if man's home was stuck off in the boondocks, they could still believe he was the central figure in the drama of creation. The second of the gods' tricks was worse. Since man was the climax of creation, the creature for whom all the rest was made, they should have had the decency to produce him in a manner suited to his dignity and importance, in a separate special act of creation. Instead, they arranged for him to evolve from the common slime, just like ticks and liver flukes. The takers really hated hearing this, but they're beginning to adjust to it. Even if man evolved from the common slime, it's still his divinely appointed destiny to rule the world and perhaps even the universe itself. But the last of the gods' tricks was the worst of all. Though the takers don't know it yet, the gods did not exempt man from the law that governs the lives of grubs and ticks and shrimps and rabbits and mollusks and deer and lions and jellyfish. They did not exempt him from this law any more than they exempted him from the law of gravity, and this is going to be the bitterest blow of all to the takers. To the gods' other dirty tricks, they could adjust. To this one, no adjustment is possible. He sat there for a while, a hillside of fur and flesh, I guess letting this pronouncement sink in. Then he went on. Every law has effects, or it wouldn't be discovered as a law. The effects of the law we're looking for are very simple. Species that live in compliance with the law live forever, environmental conditions permitting. This will, I hope, be taken as good news for mankind in general, because if mankind lives in compliance with this law, then it too will live forever, or for as long as conditions permit. But of course, this is the law's only effect. Those species that do not live in compliance with the law become extinct. In the scale of biological time, they become extinct very rapidly, and this is going to be very bad news for the people of your culture, the worst they've ever heard. I hope, I said, that you don't think any of this is showing me where to look for this law. Ishmael thought for a moment, then took a branch from the pile at his right, held it up for me to see, then let it fall to the floor. That's the effect Newton was trying to explain. He waved a hand toward the world outside. That's the effect I'm trying to explain. Looking out there, you see a world full of species that, environmental conditions permitting, are going to go on living indefinitely. Yes, that's what I assume. But why does it need explaining? Ishmael selected another branch from his pile, held it up, and let it fall to the floor. Why does that need explaining? Okay. So you're saying this phenomenon is not the result of nothing, it's the effect of a law in operation. Exactly, a law in operation, and my task is to show you how it operates. At this point, the easiest way to show you how it operates is by analogy with laws you already know. The law of gravity, and the law of aerodynamics. Okay. You know that, as we sit here, we are in no sense defying the law of gravity. Unsupported objects fall toward the center of the Earth, and the surface on which we're sitting are our supports. Right. The laws of aerodynamics don't provide us with a way of defying the law of gravity. I'm sure you understand that. They simply provide us with a way of using the air as a support. A man sitting in an airplane is subject to the law of gravity in exactly the way we're subject to sitting here. Nevertheless, the man sitting in the plane obviously enjoys a freedom we lack. The freedom of the air. Yes. The law we're looking for is like the law of gravity. There is no escaping it, but there is a way of achieving the equivalent of flight, the equivalent of freedom of the air. In other words, it is possible to build a civilization that flies. I stared at him for a while. Then I said, okay. You remember how the Takers went about trying to achieve powered flight. They didn't begin with an understanding of the laws of aerodynamics. They didn't begin with a theory based on research and carefully planned experimentation. They just built contraptions, pushed them off the sides of cliffs, and hoped for the best. True. All right. I want to follow one of these early trials in detail. Let's suppose that this trial is being made in one of those wonderful pedal-dripping contraptions with flapping wings based on a mistaken understanding of avian flight. Okay. As the flight begins, all is well. Our would-be airman has been pushed off the edge of the cliff and is pedaling away, and the wings of his craft are flapping like crazy. He's feeling wonderful, ecstatic. He's experiencing the freedom of the air. What he doesn't realize, however, is that this craft is aerodynamically incapable of flight. It simply isn't in compliance with the laws that make flight possible. But he would laugh if you told him this. He's never heard of such laws, knows nothing about them. He would point at those flapping wings and say, "See, just like a bird." Nevertheless, whatever he thinks, he's not in flight. He's an unsupported object falling toward the center of the earth. He's not in flight. He's in free fall. Are you with me so far? Yes. Fortunately, or rather unfortunately for our airman, he chose a very high cliff to launch his craft from. His disillusionment is a long way off in time and space. There he is in free fall, feeling wonderful and congratulating himself on his triumph. He's like the man in the joke who jumps out of a 19th floor window on a bet. As he passes the 10th floor, he says to himself, "Well, so far so good." There he is, in free fall, experiencing the exhilaration of what he takes to be flight. From his great height, he can see for miles around. And one thing he sees puzzles him. The floor of the valley is dotted with craft, just like his. Not crashed, simply abandoned. Why, he wonders, aren't these craft in the air instead of sitting on the ground? What sort of fools would abandon their aircraft when they could be enjoying the freedom of the air? Ah, well, the behavioral quirks of less talented earthbound mortals are none of his concern. However, looking down into the valley, has brought something else to his attention. He doesn't seem to be maintaining his altitude. In fact, the earth seems to be rising up toward him. Well, he's not very worried about that. After all, his flight has been a complete success up to now, and there's no reason why it shouldn't go on being a success. He just has to pedal a little harder, that's all. So far, so good. He thinks with amusement of those who predicted that his flight would end in disaster, broken bones, and death. Here he is. He's come all this way, and he hasn't even gotten a bruise, much less a broken bone. But then he looks down again, and what he sees really disturbs him. The law of gravity is catching up to him at the rate of 32 feet per second per second, at an accelerating rate. The ground is now rushing up toward him in an alarming way. He's disturbed, but far from desperate. My craft has brought me this far in safety, he tells himself. I just have to keep going. And so he starts pedaling with all his might, which of course does him no good at all, because his craft simply isn't in accord with the laws of aerodynamics. Even if he had the power of 1,000 men in his legs, 10,000, 1,000,000, that craft is not going to achieve flight. That craft is doomed, and so is he, unless he abandons it. Right, I see what you're saying, but I don't see the connection with what we're talking about here. Ishmael nodded. Here is the connection. 10,000 years ago, the people of your culture embarked on a similar flight, a civilizational flight. Their craft wasn't designed according to any theory at all. Like our imaginary airmen, they were totally unaware that there is a law that must be complied with in order to achieve civilizational flight. They didn't even wonder about it. They wanted the freedom of the air, and so they pushed off in the first contraption that came to hand. The Taker Thunderbolt. At first, all was well. In fact, all was terrific. The Takers were pedaling away, and the wings of their craft were flapping beautifully. They felt wonderful, exhilarating. They were experiencing the freedom of the air, freedom from restraints that bind and limit the rest of the biological community. And with that freedom came marvels. All the things you mentioned the other day. Urbanization, technology, literacy, mathematics, science. Their flight could never end. It could only go on becoming more and more exciting. They couldn't know, couldn't even have guessed that, like a hapless airman, they were in the air, but not in flight. They were in free fall because their craft was simply not in compliance with the law that makes flight possible. But their disillusionment is far away in the future, and so they're pedaling away and having a wonderful time. Like our airman, they see strange sights in the course of their fall. They see the remains of craft very like their own, not destroyed, merely abandoned by the Maya, by the Hobokam, by the Anasazi, by the peoples of the Hopewell cult, to mention only a few of those found here in the New World. Why, they wonder, are these craft on the ground instead of in the air? Why would any people prefer to be earthbound when they could have the freedom of the air, as we do? It's beyond comprehension, an unfathomable mystery. Ah, well, the vagaries of such foolish people are nothing to the takers. They're pedaling away and having a wonderful time. They're not going to abandon their craft. They're going to enjoy the freedom of the air forever. But alas, a law is catching up to them. They don't know such a law even exists. But this ignorance affords them no protection from its effect. This is a law as unforgiving as the law of gravity, and it's catching up to them in exactly the same way the law of gravity caught up to our airmen at an accelerating rate. Some gloomy 19th century thinkers like Robert Wallace and Thomas Robert Malthus look down. A thousand years before, even 500 years before, they would probably have noticed nothing. But now they see what they see alarms them. It's as though the ground is rushing up to meet them, as though they are going to crash. They do some figuring and say, if we go on this way, we're going to be in big trouble in the not-too-distant future. The other takers shrug their predictions off. We've come all this enormous way and haven't even received so much as a scratch. It's true, the ground seems to be rising up to meet us. But that just means we'll have to pedal a little harder. Not to worry. Nevertheless, just as we predicted, famine soon becomes a routine condition of life in many parts of the Taker Thunderbolt. And the takers have to pedal even harder and more efficiently than before. But oddly enough, the harder and more efficiently they pedal, the worse conditions become. Very strange. Peter Farb calls it a paradox. Intensification of production to find an increased population leads to a still greater increase in population. Never mind, the taker said. We'll just have to put some people pedaling away on a reliable method of birth control. Then the Taker's Thunderbolt will fly forever. But such simple answers aren't enough to reassure the peoples of your culture nowadays. Everyone is looking down, and it's obvious that the ground is rushing up toward you, and rushing up faster every year. Basic ecological and planetary systems are being impacted by the Taker Thunderbolt, and that impact increases in intensity every year. Basic irreplaceable resources are being devoured every year, and they're being devoured more greedily every year. Whole species are disappearing as a result of your encroachment, and they're disappearing in greater numbers every year. Pessimists, or it may be that they're realists, look down and say, well, the crash may be 20 years off, or maybe as much as 50 years off. Actually, it could happen any time. There's no way to be sure. But of course, there are optimists as well who say, we must have faith in our craft. After all, it has brought us this far in safety. What's ahead isn't doom. It's just a little bump that we can clear if we all just pedal a little harder. Then we'll soar into a glorious, endless future, and the Taker Thunderbolt will take us to the stars, and we'll conquer the universe itself. But your craft isn't going to save you. Quite the contrary. It's your craft that's carrying you towards catastrophe. 5 billion of you pedaling away, or 10 billion, or 20 billion, can't make it fly. It's been in free fall from the beginning, and that fall is about to end. At last, I had something of my own to add to this. The worst part of this is, I said, that the survivors, if there are any, will immediately set about doing it all over again, exactly the same way. Yes, I'm afraid you're right. Trial and error isn't a bad way to learn how to build an aircraft, but it can be a disastrous way to learn how to build a civilization.
Wow. Well, that certainly sounds like our world, doesn't it?
It sure does.
The ground is getting faster and faster, and we're just about to go splat.
And the fat taker, the taker is the fat takers.
Well, yeah, because it makes perfect sense. Yep. I mean, even in this whole Dakota Access Pipeline we were talking about. And when you were there, did you experience that the Army halted the construction temporarily?
No. Unfortunately, they were kind of unscrupulous. Matter of fact, in one of the press releases, a person wanted to use the word skullduggery, and somebody's questioning what it was meant. Bottom line is, no, they were unscrupulous. They did not hold true about not working. They were working day and night. Yeah. Mm.
Well, yeah, the reason I asked that, because I was looking at this article in Mother Jones from November 15th, and I was curious that if it was, because it's saying that they halted the construction, but I don't remember hearing that they actually, I know that there was a period where there was quiet, but I wasn't clear that they had halted it. But I did learn, this is something that I hadn't really heard, I'm sure it's been in the news. If I listen to the news, I might hear it.
<Don't either.
laughs> that Trump had invested between $500,000 and $1 million in the company building the pipeline.
I read something about
that.
I heard that too.
Yeah.
So I'm like, way to say conflict of interest? I mean, really, that is so intense.
Even the governor of North Dakota has his interest in that. I don't know, though, right now if construction has been stopped. It may have been, and I'm just not on top of that.
Well, this came out on the 15th, which is a couple of days ago, so it might be new because you're here now. But I do remember hearing that there was kind of a lull for a while, and that, you know, the water protectors were able to, you know, do their ceremonies and not be under attack for a few days. So I suppose this is all part of it. But I'm thinking, I remember Trump having in one of his speeches how, you know, he was saying, yeah, we need the pipelines, da 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 da.
Yeah, right.
Well, of course you do if you invested in it. It's interesting. Energy Transfer Partners. And supposedly they have been repeatedly asked to wait to see what the potential damage could be.
Yeah.
And they've refused it. But it's kind of interesting how the government is asking them to stop, but yet they're battering the poor water protectors and not protecting governments. They need to bring out the National Guard and protect those people.
They've had the National Guard, but except it's been the other way around.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's like if it's anything like the civil rights movement, they need to do that.
You know, this brings to mind Josh Fox, the maker of the movie Gasland. I went to see it at International Film Center some months ago. How to Let Go of the World and Love the Things Climate Can't Change. And I got to speak with him, you know, afterwards, after the film. And he's just saying in this film, he shows you how lands in the Pacific, islands in the Pacific, are going to be underwater, you know, in the future. He's saying if we change our ways, we could slow down the process. We've already passed the point of no return, but we could slow it down. We could deal with it if we mend our ways, so to speak.
You mean if we stop just pedaling?
And
thinking
taking.
It's all going to work. It's all going to work out. But, you know, this it kind of, you know, this is, I'm really enjoying this book, Ishmael, because it really does make really clear the insanity of the age that we are living in. It's just, and it's hard to comprehend how people could sacrifice and destroy so much for the benefit of, you know, the profit. But it's not like these people don't have a lot of resources and money and companies and businesses. I can't see that they actually need this extra profit.
But it's more
and
more.
We don't need this dirty oil. We can. Mm-mm. There's so many other alternatives. It's, and there seems to be this lock on this system, and citizens, regular people, just have no say. We have no say. It's amazing.
You know what I think it is too. I think. Many of us just feel that we're bigger than Mother Nature and we can control Mother Nature and Mother Earth. And the truth is we can't, you know. And another thing that I've noticed, especially in North Dakota, and I've been reading about it for a few years, they have these man camps because I think in 2008 it really started with the oil there and all these men were brought in to work. And all the rape that's gone on with women and children, and especially Native women. And there seems to be a direct correlation with, you know, men respecting women and respecting Mother Earth that kind of goes hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And we don't, the collective, we have the respect for Mother Earth that we should and understand at the end of the day, she rules. And whatever she says and whatever she does goes. You know, and she can just shake us off. And I don't know what's going to happen to us. And maybe we are truly at the point of no return. But I think for all of us, it's like living every day in a good way, doing no harm, and living as best we can and as sustainably as we can. And you know, having said that, God knows how many coffee cups I've used every week. And it's like, oh, stop, you know. But
well, are they paper cups?
Yeah, usually paper. But, you know,
You could get one that's refillable. That would work.
Oh, sure.
That would work. Well, I'm sitting right next to a coffee cup, so yeah. I can't.
No, we're all guilty. I mean, yeah. You know.
Well, I think it is true that there's steps that we could all take.
Mm.
However, I think the most important step is what you're doing, actually getting on the bus and going out and joining the people in Dakota. I think if enough people from around the country decided to show up there, it would be a lot more difficult for them to do what they're doing. I'm not sure that it, you know.
Well, yeah, they're looking for more people, and it's an amazing thing. But even that, I mean, right where we all stand at this very moment is as precious and as important, and standing with that and that solidarity. And we can't underemphasize the power of prayer wherever we are. So it's praying for Mother Earth, praying for the water protectors, and because this is going on all over, you know. They're praying up in Ramapo, you like right from northern New Jersey, right by Suffern. Pipelines there. It's happening all over. So wherever we are, it's just always to be, always to be in prayer all the time.
Yeah, I mean, and things are. It's we live in the most interesting of times. I keep thinking it won't get any more interesting, but then it does.
Then it does. And another day happens, and it's like, really? Yowie.
So we actually are. If you'd like to call in, you can join us. If you have any thoughts or comments or questions, perhaps we could answer a question or two. Perhaps not, but you can certainly call 347-335-0818, 347-335-0818. Because it really is a challenge in what we can do, because we don't want to become the enemy in becoming violent and becoming, so it's a challenge to be able to hold that peaceful stance in the face of aggression.
Yeah.
And it's a challenge to believe that prayers do work, that mm-hmm. energy does work.
Yeah.
But it does, you know, yeah. it really does. And it's a challenging path, and it's a slower path, perhaps.
Yeah, it is.
But, you know, it doesn't benefit to move into a position of violence as a way of ending violence. It just ultimately escalates. So there's not too much we can do in that regard. So it's just one of those crazy things, crazy, crazy world we're living in. So any, for the moment, any comments on Ishmael? What is your take on Ishmael, Matt, what you just read?
Well, he's showing, as I was saying, it brought to mind Josh Fox's film, mm-hmm. and I spoke with him. You know, he said he would come on Ecologic,
You know,
Ken Gale's show.
Excellent.
But he's just showing, it's pointing out how we are ignoring the effect of what we're doing. And with the documentaries that we have here, I'm sorry, it's more premiums. But
well, you're the expert, Matt.
Yeah, I'm premium. At this
point. We have a fierce green fire. This deals with the rainforest being destroyed. Mm-hmm. And Chico Mendez, he was one of the leaders of the Sanguineros, which were a group of people formed to try to stop wanton destruction of rainforests. And he is in a pine box now.
Yeah.
You know, this is the lengths that people go to keep doing to protect this insanity.
Yeah. I mean, well, it is that. It really is insanity. And I think that one of the things that we all have to do is to find a path where we can maintain our own sanity, because a lot of what's going on is also designed to disempower and take away our, not just our civil liberties and our inalienable rights, but our sanity.
Yeah.
and make it very, very difficult for people to survive on a day-to-day basis and to make healthy choices on a day-to-day basis. So there really needs to be, I think, a strategy on both the political level, but also on the individual level, for maintaining one's mental and spiritual health. You know, being able to find, like these indigenous cultures have this, the power of their ancestors and the power of their culture to sustain them. But it's interesting that it's more difficult to find that kind of strength since the passing of the civil rights movement, I guess, where you're really depending on spirit to be the strength behind your whatever the struggle is, whatever the effort is to change. And I think a lot of our maybe younger generation, even people of our own generations, and people are just not really motivated by the power of spirit, and so they, you know, they get out and they protest and they chant and they do that what they feel is the right thing to do. But I, like you were saying, Earth Mom, it's equally important for people to get together and spiritually pray, chant, meditate, affirm, and really bring a spiritual reckoning to what's happening on the planet. I think that that's a very powerful thing for people to do.
And even individually, you know, because the world can make us pretty crazy. And, you know, we forget that we're heart-centered and going inside and just being quiet for a moment and knowing, regardless of what anything looks like, all is well, and just realigning ourselves with spirit. And I had a funny experience. It wasn't funny. But an experience this morning, I was in Starbucks in the Port Authority, and they were kind of moving out this older lady, and it was just so contrary to what I had been with, you know, being at Standing Rock with the respect for elders. And yet here, you know, I don't know if she was homeless or not, but this woman wasn't getting the respect that she deserved as an elder. She really wasn't, and it was just young people. And it's just bizarre, you know, sometimes we just respect youth more than anything else. And, you know, spirit comes in many shapes, colors, sizes, so does consciousness. And it's not one group has more than another, but the elders need to be taken care of. And that's our society. You know, if we let it, then we can just be, you know, hungry for the next fashion accessory or the next outside thing rather than inside. And spirit's the most nebulous thing, the thing you don't see. It doesn't come out and bite you, but it's and then at the other side of the coin is it's the most real thing, isn't it? I mean, it really and truly is.
Absolutely. Well, from my perspective, it certainly is the most real thing. But it's very subtle.
Yeah.
And people are very much impacted by their addictions and the addictions to filling up space with things and ideas and images and television and phones and
YouTube,
all that stuff, you know. So it is difficult, but I think it's if we're going to stop peddling and careening towards the end of our civilization, this is really the only way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You want to say something, Paul?
So we need to dance, play music, and sing.
Yes, and tell poetry, and meditate, and recenter ourselves. I mean, if you look at any indigenous culture, that's what they did. They danced as part of their spiritual expression. They had music as part of the spiritual expression. There was even dreaming. If you look at the Aboriginal people, it was about going into the dream time and creating the reality out of the dream, which is really part of what happens. You want to say something?
I think that towards the end, you end up finding an open heart and an open spirit.
Yeah.
And so perhaps some of those distractions that you're describing, those, you know, the things that are there to be very quick, intense diversions are actually have the effect of closing up your spirit.
Barricading off in a way.
Yes.
It's true. And even other than the distraction on the screen, there is the interference of the electronics.
Yeah, the EMFs.
EMFs and the electronics also interfere. They scramble the brain. And when the brain is scrambled, the emotions are scrambled. And so there are a lot of reasons for us to have to honor nature and go sit in nature, leave the electronics at home, give yourself a video fast, you know, and detoxify and get back in tune with the harmony that is right here living side by side with us in the natural world. So there's a great opportunity for us to transform and to sustain our world. And I think that's our only chance.
Yeah.
Because if not to do, you know, young people are probably peddling the fastest. Well, they have more strength. But, you know, it's like I think that young people are so, in one way, disappointed because the opportunities are not there. The American dream is non-existent for young people. The opportunities to make it in the game is not there for them. But they have the potential to be able to really change the focus of our world. So I'm hopeful that more young people will get centered and less desirous to be part of this system that's so exploitive of the planet and of each other. But it's coming. People are becoming more conscious.
Yeah.
I really do see that. But if you're in a system, if you're in a job, people like, well, you know, I'm just doing my job, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, what do you want from me?
And but that's what the the Nazi soldier said. I'm just doing my job.
Yeah. We were only following the orders.
And then the people, I'm sure, at the Dakota Access Pipeline, oh, we're just doing our jobs. We're just doing our jobs, making a living. At some point, we have to really decide if we are making a living or making a death when we are doing our jobs, either our own death or the death of others. We all have choices to make.
There are a few of the policemen over there that have, like, shed tears, and a few that I have had heard that have left their jobs because of, you know, what they were forced to do.
I've heard that, too.
And it was September 27th, I believe. That was the day I was on a direct access, and there was a line, and the water protectors, myself included, went and we shook hands with each of the policemen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who shook hands, who looked at you, who didn't look at you. Couples stayed back, didn't want to shake hands. Who, I just said peace to each of them, and who said something back or didn't. But, you know, to know. And the thing is, like, the people that are doing that, I mean, it's even having prayer for the policemen, having prayer for these corporates at Energy Transfer Partners so that they'll wake up, having prayers for Donald Trump, that he'll wake up. You know, if that guy used his energy for positive things, we'd be in a nice way, but that remains to be seen. But it's praying for these people that are doing things that seem that are dastardly, that you know, you want to do that as well. Yeah. And the people that hurt us.
No, I agree with you. Mm. I agree with you because that's where the energy most needs to be transformed. And that's where the real
work.
Well, that's where the force is coming from. You know, that corporate power, those police powers. And if we can remember that they are also human beings, then maybe they would remember that we're human beings.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the same thing, like when we go to war, it just really, really killed me. Like with the when there was the Republican convention here in New York City, and I actually worked on it in the capacity of the environmental movement to green it up, not because I was for George Bush. But, you know, remember a guy telling me, yeah, we're going to go into Iraq and we're going to make it so much better for them. And it's like, no, don't you understand? These people there, they have husbands, wives, sons, daughters, mothers, fathers, and you kill them, you hurt them, they're going to feel the same thing you feel. You know, you can't go up in there and just totally mess up their entire lives and think you're doing these people a favor. You're not. Because you're me and I'm you. So what I'm doing to you, I'm going to do to me too. I'm going to get it back at the end of the day.
Yeah, and that's how we're getting it back. Some people call it terrorism. But, did you have any thoughts you wanted to share? Okay, let's play a little bit of music before we finish up. And then we'll come back and say good night and welcome to Hour of the Wolf.
Let me
And that piece was called Heart of the Mother, and it was by Sophia from a CD called Spiritual Healing. Let's see, what else did we play? I've kind of lost track. You heard Earth. It was Michelle and Diocello, our opening theme. And Cyber Tribe, Voices from a Different Planet. And Nagual by Michael Hewitt. We're going to end with Nawang Ketchak, Music as Medicine. And you're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. And I invite you to tune in. Stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf with Jim Foyne. For those of you who would love to do some meditation, you can do that. I have an ongoing series on Saturdays at 3 p.m. in Brooklyn. If you'd like to find out more, you can send an email to heartofmindradio@gmail.com. Would you like to say goodbye to our beautiful listeners?
Well, I would say keep dancing.
There you go.
Nice.
And Matt?
Keep playing music.
And me? Earth Mom?
Lots of love, and thanks for letting me join you guys.
Yeah, it's fun. All right, we are going to make room for Hour of the Wolf, and we thank you for being with us today, and invite you to join us again next Wednesday evening, Thursday morning at midnight.
Yeah. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, imagination, and enchantment, and sometimes darker things. My name is Jim Freund. With us this morning, a lot of BS, FW. We'll explain that in a while. And before that, a review of the movie Arrival. By Daniel Persons. Stay tuned.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. I kicked myself in last week's review for indulging in cliché, and I'm going to do it again, but it's the best way, I think, to start off this review. You know that saying, if you have a hammer, every problem is a nail? I have a concern that when I'm reviewing a film, I'm automatically invoking a corollary. If you think 2001 Space Odyssey is the greatest SF film ever made, then every great SF film is 2001. I don't think I'm as bad as all that, but I do note that when I'm taken with a film, I will look for elements of Stanley Kubrick's masterpiece in it. And when I do that, I do have to wonder whether I'm taking a round hole and trying to force a monolith-shaped peg into it. In the new and very good SF film Arrival, based on Ted Chiang's Nebula Award-winning novella Story of Your Life, Amy Adams plays Louise, a talented linguist who's drafted, willingly and eagerly, into a military-run operation that's trying to figure out a way of communicating with aliens who have parked their ovoid-shaped ships at seemingly random places around the world. We, of course, are way out of the summer film season, so no whizzing attack drones here, Bill Pullman doesn't show up for any kind of strident speechifying, although Jeremy Renner is around as a very appealing male counterpart for Louise, and Forrest Whitaker brings both authority and humanity in his role as the colonel in charge of the operation. What we do get is something deeper and, frankly, more awe-inspiring, and also more complex as competing science teams the world over try different means to communicate with the visitors, who mostly convey their thoughts by scribing inky, circular glyphs in the air. I'll be a little heretical here and say that the film's outlook is a better rendition of what The Martian was shooting for, a serious regard of the realities of science and scientists without the forced next-gen, let's-everybody-get-along attitude. In fact, international tensions and human self-interest are very much key to the message director Denis Villeneuve is trying to convey, primarily how our struggles look from a more cosmic scale. And here's where we get into the 2001 aspect. It does seem that director Villeneuve is using 2001 as a clear touchstone. While the black, egg-like alien ships, they're actually called shells in the film, are not quite as elemental a form as a monolith, they get close enough. There are games with artificial gravity and perspective similar to what Kubrick did, and a glass-covered aperture in the ship's interior anteroom that allows the humans to meet face to kind of face with the aliens takes a shape reminiscent to the space station docking bay in 2001. More, Arrival is not afraid to leaven its science with mysticism, particularly how the death of Louise's daughter molds her interactions with the aliens. And I have to be careful here, because actually that aspect, which on the surface appears to be just some emotional grounding for the character, and very effective grounding at that, leads to revelations that go far deeper and more profoundly, and surprisingly connects this film's view of the universe with Kubrick's use of time to establish humanity's relationship to the cosmos. Villeneuve does this without any trippy light shows, but the effect is still pretty mind-blowing and deeply affecting. Fall may be my favorite time of the year because this is the time when we get the real science fiction films, devoid of marketing concessions and ambitions towards franchises, films that deal with ideas and, ideally, their human impact. Arrival is very much a wonderful example of that, and it couldn't arrive at a better time. And I feel I have to say something about last week's events, and I will be quick about it because this is really not the place for it, and next week I'll be back to my stock tag to prove that. One of the things the other side is counting on is for us to despair, for us to be afraid, and there are those among us who will have every right and reason to be afraid. But the thing that will tick the Trumpists off most is if, as much as we can, we laugh and we share and we celebrate that we are black and white and Christian and Muslim and Jew and atheist, that we are diverse and maybe a little crazy. This is not an end in itself. We cannot just sit back and think a smile is going to defeat the manure show that is very likely to come. But for now, rejoice that none of us are alone. They have a lot of power, but we are not powerless, and we are going to show it. For Hour of the Wolf, I'm Dan Persons.
And for Dan Persons, I'm Hour of the Wolf. Well, okay. I would like to be able to come on the air and have played something that occurred in this very building, but on the first floor last night, where we had Kitch Johnson, who was fabulous, and Sonia Taaffe, who was fabulous, reading from their fiction. It was, if I say so myself, a good pairing, and many of the readings that I hold, the New York Review of Science Fiction readings, I get guest curators. One person in the room now is going to be doing January, in fact, and three of the four people in the room right now, not counting myself, are going to be doing engineering for it, as Terrence Taylor,
decides that he has a life. I don't know what gave him the right to think that, but all right. So we're creating, we still haven't named what it's going to be. Terrence Taylor's terrific text.
I like that better than Terrence's Minions.
Yeah, get near a microphone.
I like that one better than Terrence's Minions. I think that.
Yeah, no, Minions. Along the lines Terrence would like to have Minions.
Minions is right out. It is not alliterative.
No, it has to be four T's.
It's also trademarked, too, right? We can't actually use that.
No, we can. I mean, before, on Buffy, what was the name of the woman who became the girl who became the vampire and then turned over into Angel as well? Melanie?
I know who you mean, but my sister would know.
But the line that they used, oh, Harmony. Her name was Harmony, and yeah. she was sort of like an airhead. And she eventually becomes a vampire with those who are doing her bidding.
Spoilers, man.
No, but
for a 20-year-old show, yeah.
I haven't gotten to Angel yet.
Well, no, this is Buffy. This is like season 3 or 4.
I stopped at season 2.
But what I love about that episode is yet to come. But what I love about that episode is that the main cast couldn't stop cracking up that she had minions.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. They just kept saying, Harmony's got minions.
So we can YouTube that, right?
And also, by the way, long before that, Jews had minions. Thank you. We're here until 3 a.m.
Yeah,
and we are. Who am we anyway?
So we are the Brooklyn Speculative Fiction Writers. I am Mallory Hagman.
I am Terry Clark.
I am Sam Schreiber.
And I am